From Everbank Field in Jacksonville, this is Jaguars.com Live. A weekly look inside the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. Jaguars.com Live starts right now.
We start with a look at the Arizona Biltmore, opened in 1929. They call this the Jewel of the Desert. We'll find out why in just a few minutes when we go out to the NFL annual meeting. And welcome into Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank. JP Shadrick with you. We'll get to Brian Sexton coming up. Busy day here on Jaguars.com Live. We'll start off with a report from the NFL annual meeting. The biggest news from there today, the Raiders are headed to Las Vegas. We'll have some discussion about how that went down. And Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell will jump on set here in a moment. We'll also hear from Tom Coughlin, the executive vice president of football operations. Let's get it started, though. We go now to Phoenix, Arizona, to the Arizona Biltmore. Senior writer John Osier is with Dave Caldwell.
Thanks, JP, and I am here with Dave Caldwell at the 2017 owners' meetings. And I just hard to get used to, isn't it?
It is. It's tough.
The Biltmore.
It is.
It's tough. A month out from the draft. How ready do you feel, and how much work is there left to do?
We feel like at this point we're pretty prepared. Starting on Monday when we get back, we'll start to meet with our coaches and our personnel staff, and we'll go through all the players in the draft and with a fine-tooth comb, and we'll figure out from there.
Who you got?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
And on a serious note, though, I've asked you every year you've been here, chances of trading down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the number four pick, what kind of value it has. Any feel for that yet this year, or does that happen as you go along?
Yeah, I think it's early. I think everybody wants to know at this point in time. But as teams start to set their boards and they have their priorities, and as players start to emerge and players start to climb up the boards and teams start to get nervous as to, you know, who's going to be there when they pick, that's when you can find opportunity.
And for the record, so I have something to write tomorrow, you would be open to a trade. I have to write that every year, Dave.
Sure, we would be open to a trade.
All right, thank you very much. Write that down back at home. As you get ready for this, do you feel like in free agency, I know the goal every year is to minimize need going into the draft so you can sort of be free to do what you want to do.
Sure.
Have you done that as well this year as you'd have liked?
I think we did a good job. I think we had a good plan going into free agency to, add some talent, add some difference makers along the defensive side of the ball. We added a big left tackle in Brandon Albert. Mm-hmm. And we feel like that, you know, our needs have diminished by about four or five. And we've gotten good depth and really addressed some of the special teams needs, too.
Is it a grittier team now? I mean, that's the whole thing now.
Well, we'll see. You know, on paper, it's good. But, you know, as we've seen in years past, it's only about they have to come together as a team and they have to put the hard work in. And our coaching staff and our players and us in the personnel department, I make sure that week in, week out, we're focused on winning.
And, you know, we've always got to go social when we have you on. I mean,
that's right, yeah.
That's kind of our thing. So we will go to social. Wayne and Susan, right?
Hey, Wayne and Susan.
That's very nice of you, Dave. What is our highest concern for the draft at this moment?
Right now, we don't have a lot of concerns. Just we'd like it to get here sooner than later.
And I was going to ask about offensive line. It looks like on paper, maybe one change, maybe a second change coming in the draft if it works out. How do you feel about the line going into this season?
You know, it's kind of a work in progress. We feel pretty good about some of the young players we got, guys like Brandon Linder, A.J. Cann.
Right.
Jeremy Parnell had a good back half of the season. You had a guy like Brandon Albert. So you got one spot in your left guard that's open for competition, and that's every team across the league, you know. And, I don't think anybody has five offensive linemen that are solidified in their spots going into April.
People always want a dramatic change at a spot if the run wasn't there before. How in the world can you get better if you don't?
Well, you scheme for the run, and you saw what Coach Hackett did later in the year. We ran the ball the last 8 weeks of the season very efficiently.
Significant difference,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, significant difference. And I think it's about scheme. It's about putting our players in the best position to succeed.
Now, Fornor Calley, I believe that's how you say it. Are we going to use Dante Fowler Jr. at linebacker this year? What's the plan to get Miles Jack on the field more, and does he take over the middle? Some pretty specific stuff. I don't
so
get the answers
he gets,
yet.
He gets three questions.
He gets three. It's kind of like the genie in the bottle.
All right, yeah.
He's done.
Dante, you know, Dante will be used as a pass rusher like he was last year as our defensive end. But he's got the skill set, just the same with Yannick, to move around to be on come out in a two-point mm-hmm. stance. So we'll see what our coaches have in store come preseason. But they're both very versatile players, and we think that they could play linebacker, they could play, but we need them to rush the passer.
And the Miles Jack, any doubt that he's going to be on the field more? It doesn't sound
you know,
much doubt
that's
to you.
The plan right now, but Miles has to step up too, and we feel good about, you know, where he was last year, and he's in really good shape right now. So, you know, especially on passing downs, you could see where he can make a difference.
Gotcha. Third and final social question, Simply Kyle 8 writes, is locking up our 2014 picks for extensions next on the table? And I know there's more to it than just a yes or no question
sure.
on that.
Well, that's a case-by-case basis. And I think it's important to get all of our players in here with our new coaching staff, with Coach Coughlin, who hasn't been around these guys a lot, and to see you know, how they gel with the new staff, mm-hmm. new schemes that we have in place. And then as we get into the summer and into you know, into the season, we'll address those guys. We have time for that.
And I think that's the biggest thing, the time element you mentioned. There's no rule says you have to get this done by May.
No.
It can be done January, February next year.
That's right. And But hopefully we don't have to wait that long for someone to ask.
And how important is that element? You've talked about it before. These guys don't really know the coaches. The fans think they know these players, and we've been around them. But the new coaches haven't even been in the meeting room with them for a day. That's a big deal, right?
That is a big deal. And we just got to make sure that everybody's pulling in the same direction, and coaches, players, front office, that we're all pulling in the same direction to get a winning season here in Jacksonville.
5 years of this now, I think.
Yep.
Feel better right now going forward than you have in the first four? How would you?
As far as the roster goes right now, yeah. I mean, I think you look at what we've done on the defensive side of the ball over the last 2 years, and where we're towards the bottom of the league, and now we've added some pieces into a six-ranked defense. So we feel like that's a strength of our team, and probably maybe one of the stronger units across the league. And now our young offense, it's time for them to step up and have both sides of the ball playing well in the same season. One year offense plays well, another year defense plays well. So I think this is the year where they all play, all three phases come together.
May have to write this down, because you may have just gotten through an interview without somebody asking about Blake Bortles.
How about that? That's great.
You've covered that plenty this offseason. Yeah. We'll let you go. JP, back to you.
Thanks, JP.
A lot. John Osier with Dave Caldwell out at the Arizona Biltmore at the NFL annual meeting. Well, he says he feels better now than he has in the last 4 years about the roster. That's to be expected. This is a process in building the roster to get to a point where you have some veteran players.
Just look at both lines, and that's what we both know Tom Coughlin places a great deal of emphasis on. He's better with Brandon Albert at left tackle, and he had Malik Jackson, who was his high-dollar signing last year. Now you compliment him with Calais Campbell. I'd feel pretty good about where I'm at, too.
Yeah, I think so. Biggest news today from the NFL annual meeting in Phoenix, the Las Vegas Raiders. It's a real thing. 31-1, the ownership vote, the only dissenting vote from Ross down in Miami.
Sure.
I'm sure he doesn't want any more competition for Super Bowls. That might have something to do with it. But either way, the Raiders in either 19 or 20 will be in Las Vegas. They'll play the next 2 years for sure in Oakland. Huge news. And, you know, the bigger story, and we'll get to this, is that the Jags are not involved in any of this. It's a three-year window where you've had three franchises move all over the
place.
Well,
I mean, go bigger than that now. Go back to 1994, the end of the 94 season, when the Rams and the Raiders both fled Los Angeles, went to Oakland and St. Louis. You've had six franchise relocations since the Jaguars came into this league, and yet, you know, we have maintained our status as the team most likely to be pointed to in that regard. And when you see the Raiders leaving again, right, that's twice they've left.
Yep.
Yeah, Los Angeles had the Rams, and then St. Louis got them. St. Louis had lost the Cardinals in 87. Now they've lost the Rams. I mean, look, people can point their fingers any way they want, but what's happening in Jacksonville is a strong signal that it works in the smallest markets if you are forward-thinking, and that's certainly what Shad Khan and Mark Lamping have done. The involvement with London, what they're seeing with Daly's Place, investing private, their own capital, into a public facility, it's working here. And when you see that list right there, you have to shake your head and wonder why more people don't point their finger. And the Raiders, by the way, what were there, two sections tarped off this year? There are 27 sections.
The upper deck is never used, by the way.
27 sections of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum are tarped off. Yeah. Go to Washington. No one reports that story either. FedEx Field. They've removed seats and painted the area, right? but they don't talk about what they're doing right here in Jacksonville. And the rest of the league won't even equate the Raiders' move to Vegas to the Jaguars, but we will for you, and that is, it isn't here. The Jaguars are doing something right, and they're not involved in the conversation at all about instability. The Raiders think they're going to a stable market, and that's for a lot of other economic-minded people to talk about, but this move is interesting.
5 to 10 years ago, the Jaguars would have been the first name considered on that list.
Easy.
And then Shad Khan comes along.
Without a doubt. And the stability here is something that gives them a chance to just focus now on getting this football team winning. And I think it's worth pointing out, they sell a lot of tickets here. They sell more than they did in Miami or Tampa. They sell a lot of tickets for a football team that hasn't been very good. Now what happens when this team starts to turn the corner, as we think that it will? Well, then you just wipe all that away. All the talk of where the Jaguars will play will go away. It will just be Jacksonville with their foray to London.
We heard from Dave Caldwell a moment ago, live in Arizona. A little earlier today, we heard from the guy who was here at the – well, we're not ready for that. We'll get to that coming up. So,
okay, can I throw a thought
at you? Yeah, go ahead.
It just strikes me that 25 years ago – not even 25, we'll go at 23, which is as long as I've been here. If you had told me that one day they would play football in Las Vegas, I would have laughed. There's no way they will play professional football in Vegas. They were
professional
so,
anything.
Well,
in Vegas,
you're, no, you're
really?
Right. You're right. But Pro Bowl, because that's what I cover, and that is that they were so sensitive. I can remember doing a radio show on a Friday evening at Hooters at the Landing back in 1995, and a fan came up and was asking us about the lines. And Vic Ketchman, longtime senior writer, senior editor at this website, you know, immediately started on the conversation. We were both called in the next day. We don't talk about lines on our shows because it's a team show and teams don't talk about gambling. Well, so how does this change? I mean, look, socially speaking, right, the attitudes toward gambling have gone a long, long, long way to the other side of the field. There's casinos all over. It used to be they were just on Indian reservations. Now, I mean, you go to any city in America, you can find a casino, maybe on a riverboat, you know, on the water. But with the internet, how has it changed? So now the NFL is going to Vegas. I mean, what's next? The moon?
Great question, right?
What's next?
Mars.
Well, people will point to Europe and playing a regular season game in China. Yeah. And don't put any of that past.
No, that's out there.
The owners and Roger Goodell. Yeah. But they're in Vegas, and I marvel at how much things change.
The NHL team, for the record, is the first professional team to stake a claim there.
Yet to be named.
I think they had like Silver Knights or something like that.
All right. I
don't know which team it is.
Either, right.
But that's the first team to go. The NFL is coming up next, and that's really the biggest news from around the NFL annual meeting today. There are also a number of rule changes considered throughout the annual meeting each and every year. The competition committee makes recommendations, and the owners vote on those. Most notably, there were a couple we talked about last week on Jaguars Thursday. They're talking about shortening overtime period to about 10 minutes, speeding up the television portion of the game could
be
considered.
You know, they're trying to pull the they're setting it up. And Tom Coughlin alluded to this. He did, I know for sure, because I did a speaking engagement with him about the, you know, Game Day Central and how you had Dean Blandino and Al Rivera and his deputy, who were the ultimate authority on the call, right? That wasn't exactly true until now. What it was they always deferred to the referee who was on site. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, Dean Blandino is the ultimate authority when they go and they talk. And they're trying to pull him out from the booth and have him with a headset and a tablet on the sideline. The thought is that Dean, if there's a gray area at all, that Dean Blandino in New York, for consistency's sake, will be the person that makes the ruling, that makes the call. You know, they've had different issues with what's a catch, right? That's the most famous one, going back to Calvin Johnson in Chicago a few years back. And so there will be a consistency applied towards things like that. At least that's the hope from the NFL's perspective, with everything coming from him from Game Day Central in New York in terms of disputed or controversial calls. That's a major one.
Yes, absolutely it is. But last year, at least, he was involved in the process
on the
public side of this thing. But at the end of the day, the referee's boss is talking to you on the phone, right?
Well, what they're trying to do is speed up the game. And what they know is that when you're going back and forth with the booth official, with the official on the field, with the guy in New York, you're slowing it down. So they want some clarity. They want to make it something that is simpler and easy. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. He's not going to stop a game mid-progress and go, whoa, that guy was out of bounds. No. There has to be a challenge flag thrown. Right. And they are talking about new situations, new opportunities for coaches to use challenge flags. That's a point that they will debate in the competition committee and the owners' meetings as well. But as of right now, it just says that when they reach a point that a decision must be made on a controversial call, that it will come from Blandino. It will not be left up to the referee on the field to make that decision in the case of a controversial call.
We're also hearing from some national media types throughout the NFL annual meeting. Earlier today, Judy Batista from NFL Network, formerly of the New York Times, caught up with John Osier. She recently had a chance to sit down with Tom Coughlin out in Arizona. Here it is from earlier today.
I'm here with Judy Batista of the NFL Network, formerly of the New York Times. And Judy, you had a chance today to catch up with Tom Coughlin. And I'm wondering, I know you spent a lot of time with him in New York. What were your impressions of Tom?
Well, he's the same Tom Coughlin that he was in New York. He immediately started talking about toughness and discipline and all those things that he talked about a lot with the New York Giants, and now he's talking about them again with the Jaguars. He started out by saying how pleased he was to be able to go back to Jacksonville because he's got a lot of emotional investment in the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise from when he was there in the beginning, and I think it means a lot to him to be able to come in and hopefully bring them back up.
It strikes me from talking to him that it does seem like, I don't want to say bow on his career, but if he could bring this franchise back, as much as he won in New York and he'll always be proud of that, there's something about Jacksonville to him, and it sounds like you got that impression.
No question. I think he's got a sense of this would bring his career full circle. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no question when he left the Giants that he really, really wanted to be back with a franchise. He worked in the league office for a year, but you knew he was itching to get back to a franchise, to be around players, to help build a team. And I think this was the perfect spot for him. You know, I asked him, do you think once you get players on the field, you're going to be itching to be a coach again? And he said he's going to have to figure out how to rein himself in. You know,
now, can
he's
not he do gonna... that? You've been around the guy. We've all been around the
we'll
guy.
We'll see. Yeah. I'm not sure about that. I mean, Doug Marrone might have to be like, you know, back.
Good luck, right?
Good luck. But, yeah, he was talking about, like, he's not going to be able to be in the locker room talking to players. But I do think there's sort of a bigger picture thing here that's meaningful to him about, like, the franchise means an awful lot to him. He obviously had a great deal of success in building the franchise up from the ground. And I think he'd like to bring it back to success and to the playoffs.
Now, the thing, I hadn't been around Tom since probably 2000, 2001, except maybe combines and owners' meetings. And in the time I've been around him since he's been back, it strikes you, this is not a seven-year-old guy.
No. In
spirit, in fact, in body. And, you know, you've been around him since 04. He seems amazingly ageless.
He is ageless. There's no question he's got more energy than the rest of us. I mean, when people, you know, when he left the Giants and people were saying, well, you know, he's the 70-year-old, like, this, can he really be on the sideline? And I'm like, really? Tom Cott, like, have you seen him? Are you kidding? He's got more energy than we have. So, yeah, I have no concerns about Tom Coughlin's energy level. He loves this. I mean, he loves football. He loves being around players. It does fuel him. He's got a tremendous amount of energy and a real vision. And, you know, you're going to do it his way. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question he believes very much in the culture of a franchise and having a tough-minded culture and discipline. So you're going to have to toe the line. But that's a good thing because I think that energizes people and it keeps you a little bit on edge.
Without giving away your story, what was maybe your biggest takeaway from talking to him about the Jaguars, where he thinks it is and how he feels about the process?
I think he feels like there's a lot of talent on the team. It needs to be translated into wins. He said they need to learn how to finish. Mm-hmm. He said that's a thing. You have to learn how to do it. They need toughness. You need discipline, and you need to be a team. He talked about that he says, you know, sometimes when you don't win, you know, players start to go off in different directions. You got to be a team. You've got to be cohesive. That's what allows you to finish and to have the mental discipline to get through tough times and then turn them into good times.
Does it surprise you that he's brought in a lot of veterans, a lot of 5- and 6-year guys as free agents, I think 9 of them? Seems like he wants a team that's got some experience and some professionalism, if you will.
Professionalism and leadership. Like, he always placed a big premium on that at the Giants. He wants leaders in his locker room. Professionalism is really important. Again, there's a lot of young talent on that roster. But I think he has always felt that you need older, experienced players to sort of guide those young players in the right direction. And so he wants guys who are like-minded, like Tom Coughlin, to steer them in the correct path.
And you said you asked him about Blake Bortles. And
I did. I said, I asked, what do you need to see from Blake Bortles? And he said, wins.
So he hasn't changed that much.
No, it's Tom Coughlin.
Okay. Judy, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
It's always fantastic.
Great to see you.
It's Judy Batista from the NFL Network.
John Oser earlier today from the Arizona Biltmore. Interesting thoughts there. She covered him on the beat in New York with the Times and knows him in that environment, a very successful environment,
sure.
Of course, in New York. They got a lot of things done. What do you think about the full circle idea that they discussed there of him obviously starting here in the National Football League, beginning the franchise here, never really seeing its full potential? They were so close a couple of times. Getting it done in New York.
I don't think Tom would use that full circle thing because it implies there's an end, right? Because at some point you actually connect the two sides of the circle.
Yeah.
And Tom isn't about ending anything.
Okay.
I think Tom recognizes that there was a chance to come back here and take care of some unsettled business, some unfinished business, kind of a Wyatt Earp mentality,
yeah.
Right? Come back, clean up the locker room, get guys straight, and let's go be tough guys and get this thing done.
That sometimes takes a gunfight at the OK Corral
well,
to get it done.
It,
yes,
it takes
which is what's going on right now.
Well, it takes someone who's willing to pull both six shooters, right,
yeah.
And let you know I'm here to fight and I'm here to win. And Tom is absolutely that guy. I had the chance to spend some extended time with him last week. And I'm going to tell you now, he is right in the middle of it all. He's not in that. And there's some people that wondered at first, people who didn't know him, if he could go down to Jacksonville and oversee. Yeah, he's overseeing it, but he's involved in every phase of it because that's who he is and what he's all about. He ain't going to put anything out there that he has not put his full effort behind.
Right.
It's not like he's out there playing golf with sponsors, right? I mean, he's not just there to kind of walk people through. He is here to get things done and to add his years of experience and excellence to the process.
And he'll help out in those areas where he can as long as it doesn't disturb the task at hand.
Well,
right?
And he's trying to figure that out. You know, we had a long conversation about that, and I said to him point blank, look, Phil Bengston took the sidelines over in 68, and Lombardi went to the press box. And Lee Remmel had to kick him out because he was disturbing the media, because he was causing such chaos. He was so unhappy with what he saw on the field. I said, Tom, is that you? I don't know what I'm doing yet. Right? I mean, he knows he's going to be upstairs and not on the sidelines, and he knows he's going to be in a booth. Not quite sure how many people he wants in there yet.
I would guess not
That's
many.
The evolutionary process of where he's at right now. He's willing to admit it. He has to me. He did to John. He's trying to figure out how all the pieces go. But what he does know is how to assemble a roster, how to build a coaching staff, how to create a winning culture, right? And he's doing all of that right now, and he'll cross the other bridge when he gets there in the fall.
Speaking of Tom Coughlin, John Oser caught up with him earlier today. You can catch that on Jaguars.com coming up a little bit later. Our thanks to Judy Batista, Dave Caldwell, and to John Oser in Arizona. For Brian Sexton, our entire crew, I'm JP Shadrick. Thank you for watching Jaguars.com Live, presented by EverBank.